You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the May 2025 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin with Amateur Radio Insights by Kirk Kleinschmidt, NT0Z. NT0Z at stealthamateur.com. Sourcing terrific parts in the modern era. As I was blissfully binge-listening to the Solder Smoke podcast, my current go-to antidote for news-induced trauma, I stumbled upon a gem from 2016. Pete, N6QW, confidently declared that it was undoubtedly the greatest era ever for homebrewing hams. He wasn't wrong then, and for the most part, he's still right today. Compared to scouring hamfests, waiting months for print publications, and months more for the inevitable schematic corrections, or cornering a reclusive expert at a local club meeting, today's information landscape is an embarrassment of riches. With a click or two, your elbows deep into YouTube tutorials, recorded presentations from Dayton, or even live streams where you can pepper experts with questions from your recliner or participate in a real-time build-a-thon with other ops who are also learning the ropes. Have you watched a Mr. Carlson's Lab video lately? That guy is a global Elmer superhero. He's repairing vintage radios with surgical precision one moment, then guiding novices through transistor theory the next. It's almost enough to forgive Canada for the metric system. Almost. For some reason, as a kid, I loved seeing gas pumps in Toronto dispensing imperial gallons. I guess it made me feel as if I were in a foreign country. And speaking of gear, have you noticed how ridiculously inexpensive test equipment has become? If someone in the 1980s had promised you a 100 megahertz digital storage oscilloscope, a vector network analyzer, and a spectrum analyzer, you'd assume they were either independently wealthy or worked for a government lab. Yet today, this impressive lineup will set you back roughly the price of a middling flat-screen TV. For around $400, you're wielding power equivalent to an 80s or 90s lab setup worth a year's salary. It's borderline unfair. They are hobby-grade instruments, but today's hobby-grade instruments are extremely useful. Then there are the modules, kits, SDR dongles, and discrete parts. Remember when finding RF transistors or ICs felt like hunting for buried treasure? Now, various online sources, some domestic but many overseas, practically shower us in affordable electronics around the clock. Of course, not every $10 special from Shenzhen is a gem. Some are junk and some are completely fraudulent. But even those can teach us valuable lessons, usually about patience or anger management. Two illustrations on this page show plastic bags full of parts. The caption reads, "Recent pre-tariff parts orders from DigiKey left and Tata right. Nothing unusual to see here, and everything was packaged as expected. Who has the best anti-static bags? It's a toss-up. See text. NT0Z photo." Back to the article. One area we've arguably lost ground is in-person mentoring. Traditional Elmering, with hands-on soldering sessions, antenna parties, and troubleshooting round tables, seems less common. Some clubs still struggle to attract younger enthusiasts, and pandemic-era isolation didn't help. Yet ironically, the same digital technology that displaced some of our physical meetups has created a thriving global Elmer community. Forums, groups, and online hangouts now fill the gap, providing advice that's accessible anytime, anywhere, assuming you can wade through occasional bouts of online crankiness or debates about proper grounding. Much of this bounty comes courtesy of Asian electronics manufacturing powerhouses. Let's face it, without China's scale, ingenuity, and sheer audacity in electronics production, we wouldn't have half the affordable tools and toys we take for granted. They're supplying everything from capacitors to microcontrollers, accelerating innovation in hobby workshops and corporate labs alike. Yes, you might occasionally get an amusing typo in the manual. "Turn on slowly to avoid fire" remains a personal favorite. Or no manual at all. But that's the price we pay for global democratization of radio experimentation. So Pete was and is dead right. It really is the best time ever to be a home brewing ham, but the tariffs are now real. Thanks to the increasingly turbulent tariff and trade war situation, the costs of parts and even our ability to actually acquire them may be changing. Ignoring for a moment the broader economic implications, let's zoom in on our hobby. These American tariffs and retaliatory tariffs by other countries have become unpredictably real. One day they're announced, the next they're withdrawn. Initial rates fluctuate wildly, and promises of temporary measures evolve into something worryingly permanent. And as the pundits say, the markets hate unpredictability most of all. One potentially devastating blow is the demise of the de minimis tariff exemption. Previously, hobbyists could gleefully order from Tata, Temu, or AliExpress, confident that shipments under $800 would sail through customs tariff-free. No longer. Back-and-forth tariffs and import-export restrictions with China range from a brutal 110% to an eye-watering 240%. That's enough to turn those once unbeatable deals into wallet-emptying traps. If your orders even ship, buckle up. Hong Kong, the port through which my recent Tata order transited, has reportedly pulled the plug on these low-cost, formerly no-tariff shipments. The USPS mailing rates from China to the U.S. and the no-tariff costs below $800 situation were quite punishing to domestic small business shippers. But that's a story for another time. I am one of those small domestic shippers, so I get it. I admit that I did a little tariff anxiety shopping over the past 2 weeks, stocking up on single and double-sided blank PC boards and higher wattage resistors and electrolytics so I can restore some vintage radios and rebuild a couple of HP23 Heathkit power supplies. Not everything came from Tata, one of my favorite Asian suppliers. Consistently better quality parts at the same low prices, as some came from DigiKey right here in Minnesota. Tariff costs were still added to my DigiKey order, more later. So buying locally is definitely not going to help most of us avoid tariff madness. Some suppliers have spent the past few months stockpiling inventory, and some, many, online resellers at Amazon, eBay, Etsy, etc., expect to be no longer in business in short order because Chinese-flagged container ships have begun winding down service in tandem with the tariff trade war situation. I haven't yet pulled the trigger on buying a set of OD6 Plus rated safety goggles designed for CO2 laser protection that will allow me to safely clean and service a new industrial laser engraver that was generously given to me by a customer after she shut down her small trophy shop. I plan to use the machine to laser etch PCBs, a task for which it's complete overkill, but the price was right. An illustration on this page shows two blank PCB boards in plastic bags. The caption reads, "I stocked up on blank PC boards for Manhattan construction and feedstock for the PCB laser engraver. Not so much for tariff reasons, but because ABC Fab, everyone's favorite PC board vendor on eBay, announced that he was taking the summer off. At least I can tinker if tariffs and trade wars collapse civilization." Back to the article. In looking at the various options on Amazon, I noticed that many of the laser glasses came with "Only X left, order soon" warnings. All of the $40 laser glasses are made in China, whereas the USA-made safety glasses range from $200 to $500 and are not even sold on Amazon. Unlike most hobbyist open-frame laser engravers on the market, this unit is a closed, protected system that does not require users to wear safety glasses during normal operation. The hefty 40-watt emitter is well shielded, and the machine has a lid with safety interlocks. The real danger comes during cleaning, calibrating, and alignment. Without safety glasses rated at OD6 Plus and specifically designed for CO2 lasers, one wrong move, even from a reflection and not even a direct contact between my retinas and the main beam, and I might instantly go blind. With high-power lasers, there are no second chances. My conundrum, of course, is that, while not wanting to go blind, I also don't want to go broke. Most of the very occasional cleaning and servicing takes place with the power cord unplugged, and the few operations that might require me to tweak a setting while the machine is plugged in or even powered up are minimal. The actual chances of me cooking my eyeballs is extremely small, but it's not zero. That's why I must wear protective glasses at all times, save for normal operation of the engraver, and that I must buy a set of CO2 laser safety glasses. I plan to keep a close eye on Amazon inventory while I call a couple laser shops and the engraver's manufacturer to see what's recommended. Pending recommendations and info from the folks I call, I will almost certainly buy something from Amazon. But will the inventory hold? The next few days will tell. An illustration on the next page shows a label for an item. The text reads, "Item, Stackpole Resistors, from recent DigiKey parts order." At the far right, the item is identified by the T, following item cost of $1.11, as being subject to tariff charges, and the actual tariff for the item, 11 cents, indicated just below. This seems rational for now. See text. Back to the article. DigiKey's tariff transparency. My recent Tata order, which came in just under the wire, didn't line item costs related to tariffs. Whether those tariffs were incurred months ago in a more reasonable climate or more recently, the prices are the prices, and they are delightfully low, so no tariff talk is required. My recent DigiKey orders, however, took an approach that I didn't expect but fully appreciate. As shown in the photo, the tariffs associated with each purchased item are noted right next to the item's cost and are tallied in total at the end. You don't have to wonder or guess whether there are tariff costs or what they are. as they're right there in black and white. Other mega suppliers may do this, but I have no recent direct experience. Now, tariffs on my recent order were a buck or so on $35 in parts. If the tariffs were $75 on $35 in parts, that's a different dimension. On DigiKey's site, as you're researching the near infinite number of potential parts from dozens of suppliers, the tariff costs per part are also displayed. So while you may experience shock and awe, you won't be taken by surprise. If every reseller of every imported product highlighted tariff costs, it would at least provide valuable education to the buying masses. DigiKey's unbelievably good service. In addition to highlighting per-item tariff costs, my recent order also highlighted DigiKey's fantastic, hard-to-believe customer service, and in doing so, also highlighted the generally terrible customer service provided by another American bellwether, Federal Express. When I placed my order, I was in a hurry as some of the parts were earmarked for customer repairs. As an impatient customer myself, I know all too well that I don't like waiting for stuff, especially when stuff goes awry. Being nearby, I typically take advantage of DigiKey's offer of free shipping on all normally stocked parts if the order is accompanied by a mailed-in check. You write the check. You still remember how, right? Send it in with your order, putting an old-fashioned stamp on the envelope, and DigiKey chooses the shipper based on its own criteria. You bought a few hundred Forever stamps back when they were cheap, right? Me neither. Located in the same state, I'm 2 days away regardless of the shipper, so it's a great deal. But the check mailing process also takes a couple days. So for this rush order, I coughed up the $7 shipping fee and ordered online. As usual, the DigiKey order was processed and on an outbound FedEx ground truck this time. In what seemed like minutes, tracking info provided via email, and all that. Over the next 2 days, I took a peek at the tracking data, and after the weekend, I noticed that the package had been stuck in St. Paul, 80 miles away, for 3 days. It was now Monday, the day originally expected for delivery. I called FedEx, which was ultimately useless. FedEx Ground is not exactly FedEx proper, and the thought of providing actual customer service is probably a bridge too far for a $7 package shipping fee. FedEx Ground had already lost money on my shipment simply by answering the phone. Of course, promised outreach by an escalated case manager never happened, nor did expedited shipping when it became clear that my package had been sent to Ocala, Florida, some 1,400 miles away. The FedEx I knew and loved from back in the day would have put that errant box on a plane in Florida and handled it. But as I said, FedEx Ground is not really FedEx. Now, I have read in online forums about folks having customer service issues and even failures with DigiKey, but I have never experienced one, and my immediate experience was ridiculously good. On Monday, I called DigiKey and was immediately put through to a shipping department problem resolution specialist. She confirmed the FedEx delay and misrouting, and, are you sitting down? Immediately offered to resend a no-cost replacement order so I wouldn't be inconvenienced, as some parts were for pending customer repairs. I might have expected this if I were a high-dollar customer, but this level of service for a $40 order? Although I'm known for being a value-conscious shopper, read between the lines, even I couldn't immediately accept such generosity. I told her that I would keep an eye on the tracking and that I was also in process with FedEx, which might get the stuff here before the end of the week, a drop-dead date of sorts. She told me that she had made notes in my incident file, and if FedEx couldn't resolve it, to call her back before supper time on Wednesday. Wow! As it turned out, FedEx had put the misrouted box back on a slow boat, and not an airplane, and after checking on the tracking here and there, I called DigiKey when it was clear that FedEx Ground wasn't going to make it. The DigiKey rep there, not the same one, immediately issued an overnight replacement order and asked me to call back if I didn't have the parts by noon the next day. I was stunned, and although I wanted the parts, I didn't want DigiKey to pay for what was entirely a FedEx mistake. I told her so and was relieved when she said, "We will square this up with FedEx. Don't you worry about that." Phew. TLDR. The replacement parts arrived at 10 a.m. the next day. Customer problem fixed that day as well. And the original parts that got a scenic tour of the country? They arrived on my front deck at 9 p.m. on Sunday night. My motion detector caught the tail end of the stealth delivery. The only way that could happen is if someone at the local FedEx Ground terminal, some 20 miles away, made an out-of-band delivery late on a Sunday night to solve a problem created by someone else in a far-flung part of the company. If that person hadn't gone the extra mile, who knows when the delivery might have been? An illustration on this page shows many packages of parts. The caption reads, "Not quite as recent parts order from Mauser. The large bubble mailers from three warehouses, each with a handful of tiny parts inside, are shown here spread out on the driveway. This seems weird," see text. Back to the article. The locals, in this case and perhaps many others, went the extra mile, even if corporate did not. Although FedEx has had 53 years to become perhaps the most experienced package logistics company in the world, no massive process is error-free. But DigiKey, founded only 1 year after FedEx, exhibited customer service that probably couldn't be any better. In today's cut-every-corner retail environment, it takes a lot to shock me, and I'm shocked. So, when I create my own billion-dollar electronics startup in retirement, guess who's going to get my business? Packaging madness. Now that the trade and tariff wars are really heating up, every penny is starting to count, and some companies aren't handling it gracefully. Amazon, for example, has been shipping stuff to me in ridiculous packaging. It seems as if every indestructible item has been properly protected and nicely packaged, while every delicate electronic item has been packed inside a giant airbox, flopping about because it's loose and unprotected. When tablets and hard drives arrive this way, I return them for a replacement without even opening the outer box. But that, too, is another story. When I ship stuff on eBay, it's well packaged, and I often get feedback to that effect, because my efforts unfortunately sort of stand out in the generally dismal state of online packaging. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.